This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Mike Schoeb.
On who and what was thrown at that gentleman, and that gentleman has been ejected, but it was an ugly, ugly sight. I can't circle. I don't have my telestrator today, but what? Here comes a pizza. See it? Oh, jeez.
Highly unnecessary.
And the Bulldog.
Guy with the Patriots jacket, and of course, he's been asked to leave the ball game for ruining a good piece of pizza. So, get beer all over him. And here comes...
On WGR.
That was an awful sight here at Fenway, and that is not tolerated in this ballpark. He has been ejected and never again allowed to buy pizza.
Sports Radio 550.
No threat of that happening when all your fans are cardboard cutouts, it would seem. It is August 11th, a Tuesday. It is 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We are about a minute away from face-off between Columbus and Tampa in Toronto, a game to be played, of course, with no fans at all, and 3.5 hours away from Miami and Toronto to play baseball in Buffalo with cardboard cutouts in the seats. And this will mark the first Major League Baseball game in Buffalo in either 105 years or 135 years, depending on whether or not you count leagues other than the National League to have been major leagues. You know, it's just once in a while, I think it's just good to sort of reset this weird life that we are in the middle of. Like, what if any of that makes sense?
None of it.
And it's the home opener.
Right.
On August 11th. How could that even be possible? How could there be a situation where a team would play, forget that it's in a different country, but that it would play its home opener on, I don't know, it's the case. So there was, right. Who knew? Well, there was a scenario where this was possible and we're in it.
Not only is it, you know, the whole situation is weird, but baseball, when did baseball start? The 3rd of July? So yeah. This is their first home game. Like, even that, even within the context of this crazy, truncated baseball season and sports calendar, you still have a situation where you had to wait, you know, 18 days of a season before you got to play a home game, and I'm sure that everyone else has played home games already.
Yep, that's right.
At least in their home ballparks, anyway. Like, yeah, I know. You know, the Blue Jays have had technically played home games. Right,
so,
in Washington or something? I don't know.
Right, that's right. They did. Yeah. So, you know, it doesn't really matter, like, how you feel about it is just how you feel. I feel like there is, for this, there is out there a sense of, like, wow, this is awesome. And I feel more that than indifference. Like, I feel I love the historical, you know, aspect or importance, if you will, of this. I love all that. I want to look up what happened in 1915 and 1885. The National League, Buffalo was in the National League. This National League, now they're in the Blue Jays are in the American League, but the National League we know and have in 1885. And this gives you an opportunity to learn all about that if you want to. Like, it sort of comes to life again. Mm-hmm. And I like all that. I have a friend who is working these games this summer for the Blue Jays or for baseball. And I love that. I mean, I love that. I know, like, Brian, too. Brian is working these games for WGR, Brian Koziol, Pat Malacaro. I love, like, that sort of personal connection to it. It's here. But we can't go. And in that sense, that explains why there's the other sort of attitude about this, which is, who cares? Like, what difference does it make if they're in Buffalo or on the moon? Because, you know, you can't go, especially if you don't have any sort of personal connection to it. Or interest in what happened here in 1885. Anyway, you have both.
Yeah. Yeah. I know this isn't, you know, for someone who doesn't care or is indifferent or more maybe belligerently indifferent even, because I'm sure that's out there. Like, why are you so excited? No one can go. You know, okay. I am someone who, look, I became a Red Sox fan because I liked the ballpark. Okay, so the settings that baseball games are played in still matter to me. And, like, I will pick and choose baseball games to watch on TV when I had access to all of them. I haven't in a while, based on, like, whether I like the ballpark or not as much as anything else. I've plenty of times watched teams I didn't really care about play somewhere that I considered worth watching, some outdoor ballpark, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Chicago, whatever, rather than watch the team I really like, the Red Sox, play in a dome in Tampa. Because it just aesthetically, it's not really working for me. So I've seen maybe, I don't know, how many times have we seen the ballpark on TV? Like, for a game, not just like highlights on the news, but like a game from the ballpark, I don't even know. It's single digits for me, for sure. Because you just don't get AAA baseball on TV that often. I mean, I know they put some games on now and then on the local cable. I haven't had that in years.
Are you saying,
to me,
you weren't watching?
It's an opportunity.
Are you saying you weren't watching the games on Empire when I did them, like 20 years ago?
No.
You weren't watching those games?
I did not see those games that I remember. No. I'm thinking more like recently, like I think like Brian referenced yesterday, like he's had an opportunity when Pat has done TV. I think that's been like on like Spectrum cable, and I don't get that. I forgot that they ever had games on Empire. They
yep.
did. You
yep.
did them?
Yeah, a couple. Oh. I did a few of them with Duke.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe
five.
I don't feel like I shouldn't say I never knew that. I probably knew it and have forgotten, and I apologize.
I forgot. I knew it and forgot. So you shouldn't feel
but
bad.
Anyway, okay, good. The point is, to me, there is something aesthetically cool about seeing the ballpark that we've all been in, you know, dozens and dozens of times over the years on TV as the setting for a major league game. Like, I will get a kick out of that tonight when I turn it on. I mean, I know I will. I'm anticipating it. I doubt that I'll be let down. I think it'll be pretty cool. So, and I want as much detail as I can get on the cardboard cutouts behind home plate and everything, like what is actually represented there. So, you know, is it the greatest thing that's ever happened? No. Do I need news conference after news conference announcing how important it is? Maybe not.
Do you
but
care
as a sports fan?
Do you care more about the Blue Jays than you normally would?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's part of it.
I hope they have a good summer because they're playing their home games here. I mean, I've never really had a big problem with them. You know, they've been a rival when I was really dialed into the Red Sox, but mostly just is, you know, I've said this all along when it was first percolating and then it went away and then it came back. Just, I can't really put it into words. It's just one of those things that is going to make me smile. And that's it. That's all I need. It's not more than that. So I don't want to make it more than that, but that's not nothing right now, you know, like turning on the TV and going, ah, okay, that feels good. You know, I underestimated how much hockey would mean to me in that way. And it's been, I think, this is going to sound maybe ridiculous to some people, but it's been good for my mental health to have hockey back. It's a normalizing experience to watch hockey, even in this bizarre setting and at this strange time of the year on the calendar for it. So much in the same way that, that's working for me, I anticipate that the baseball being played in Buffalo is going to be cool. Like, I'm still the guy that drives past the ballpark, even without all this going on. I always want to take a peek inside just because it's a ballpark and it's right there. So I find those things, I don't know, maybe strangely to some people, appealing. Like, I just want to look at them when I drive by.
Yeah. At the same time, I'm somebody that spent lots of time at Salem Field or, you know, Pilot Field and all its names in between. And I have great memories of going there, right from the first year it opened in 88 to last year, like seeing certain players and, you know, being out with my wife and, you know, for the championship or different things, lots of different throwing out the first pitch. I mean, different things, different experiences I've had there are really cool. And when I will see this game tonight, I'll think of some of that like I'm doing now, you know? So I love all that. I love how Buffalo was close to the major leagues, built a stadium that was considered so excellent that it launched a trend in stadiums that, you know, when Camden Yards happened, everybody was blown away, and like the Buffalo ballpark started that. So there's a place that it has in history for that. When you drive by it on the 190 and look in, that's a beautiful picture to me. Like, looking in at night when there's a game, especially when there's a big crowd, that's the best. When you can look in and see for that 2 seconds as you're driving, you sort of peek to your right and see the baseball game. That's pretty cool. The stadium is like, I'm watching the Blue Jays in their tweet walk on the field last night for batting practice or whatever. And like, it does not look, you notice that it's not major league though, right? Like, you notice that.
Yeah.
The tunnel is painted and it's nice and everything. But when you watch Major League Baseball and they show the outfield, you don't see a giant net. You see seats. You see a monster. You see, you know, the green monster. You see upper deck seats. And here, not only is there not that, but there's that giant net in left field, which is not, you know, not a great aesthetic. So you might kind of wish, not that the ballpark is new at all, but it's new to this. You might kind of wish that the skyline looked different behind it, or the city looked like something. It was a different viewpoint of the city than it is when you're looking out from home plate.
Yeah, I never really knew if that was because of the sun, and it had to be facing a certain direction. But, yeah, I mean, you think of, like, Pittsburgh's ballpark, and you've got the bridge, the bridges and the river, but, like, you've got the city there, and that is your background if you're sitting, you know, almost anywhere in that ballpark, but especially, like, between the bases. Like, that's your vista, and it's beautiful. And this is the opposite, and you've got, like, you know, there's some stuff over there now, but it's still not, it's always looked better. Every time I've been there, I mean, I really think this is true. Every time I've been there at some point, I do walk out to right field just to, you know, sit for a few minutes and just look at what you can get of the skyline from there. It's even tough because of the angle, but you're missing out on really the backdrop of the city, which is why it looks so cool when you drive by on the highway, because it's sitting in there, you know, nestled amongst the downtown, and it looks really neat. When you're in there looking outward from a seat watching the game, you're looking at the 190 and some grain elevators, which, you know, is not great.
Or even what, like the Harbor Center now? Is that even what you behind the? I guess that's behind the parking garage. That might, you might not be able to see.
Yeah,
that.
I don't think you're. Yeah, I don't think you're getting that. I think you might get the casino maybe. I think the casino for sure. You might see that, but like, so it's just not, you know, it's just not a great backdrop, and so that won't look great on TV if you see it.
But what are you going to do? It is what it is, right? It's great from a certain standpoint. And I'm glad that it's happening. So it's the Blue Jays and the Marlins tonight, 6:37. Our Blue Jays, if you will. Jonathan Villar will be the leadoff hitter for Miami against Hyunjin Ryu of the Blue Jays, their ace, as this game gets going at 6:30. We will talk to Ben Wagner at 4. Ben was the Bison's broadcaster for many years. got the call up to Toronto. Was it last year or the year before? Might have been 2 years ago.
I think last year was last the first year. Yeah.
And now here he is. And everybody has their own ways of describing how this year is so different for them. I mean, Ben is a pretty good case study. He was the Bison's announcer for years, gets the call up to Toronto. He's flying all over the major leagues. Then this year happens, and the Blue Jays move to Buffalo, and he can't go. Like, he is not with them. He's right. Broadcasting their games from a studio in Toronto. And how great would that be, you know? Like, what's it like? Everybody sort of comes to – all your friends and everybody you work with sort of come to your place, and you can show them, like, this is where that is. You can answer all the questions. You can kind of show off a little bit, and, you know, whatever. And he is not here to do
even
that.
Even to the players, maybe, to some extent, right? Like, even to the guys on the team, you might be able to. Oh, a lot of the guys on the team spend time here, too.
But that's right, too. Yeah. But, yes, like, it would just be – it would be a proud moment, and he doesn't get to show up. So that's just so funny.
Right.
Brian Koziol, as I mentioned, he was on yesterday, be covering the Blue Jays through the duration of this season here for us, and he'll be on with us, we expect, in the third hour. He'll check in and tell us what it's like over there. There are lots of cutouts in the seats, and I look forward to seeing what that looks like. At the same time, we have the Sabre jerseys today. Now I know it's okay to talk about what we saw. Yesterday, we weren't sure and kind of shied away from it, except to mention a reference to the city flag and what followed yesterday. So I mentioned how the Sabres incorporated the city flag in their jerseys. And it's what, like a stitching around the back collar? Is that what it is? It's somewhere on the jersey.
Yeah, it's not something that would be visible when they're being worn. But if you buy one, I assume you get that in it as well. And it's just it's a cool little touch to, you know, pay homage to where they play.
And so what I found out yesterday after mentioning that was that a bunch of sports teams have use the city flag. FC Buffalo, the Buttes.
And
there was a Bills hat with the city flag, you know, sort of incorporated in the design.
I felt really silly. I said yesterday the first time I realized, you know, the city flag was Jeremy, and that's wrong. It would be FC Buffalo. Because I've been friend Nick Mandola is one of the co-owners of that organization, and he worked with us for a long time, and so I've always paid attention to what they were doing, and I knew that the logo was in part based on the design of the city flag, and I just forgot that I knew that yesterday when you brought this up, and so I felt a little silly about that, but we learned I did not remember anything about the Bills hats that I had seen, nor the Buttes. So, my bad on that. But I knew about FC Buffalo. I just neglected it.
The jerseys look very similar to the early day Sabre jerseys, almost identical. You have a little bit more detail in the logo. There was a story about how the gold or yellow stripes are now trimmed in white, that Terry Pegula wanted that. Right, Bulldog? That's what we found out yesterday, that he liked the idea of them being trimmed in white. So we have that. But
shoulder patches, I think, right? The originals had patches on the shoulders. Like the logo, small versions of the logo were on the shoulders. And those aren't there, which, I'm not inclined to complain about that.
I like that the number is off the front. That was an interesting chapter last time around when the Sabres went back to blue and gold in 06-07, and what they did was put a number on the front. And in short, they thought that this was going to be, like, everybody was going to do that, right? That this was going to be the look around the league, and then whatever was in motion toward that was stopped short, and it didn't turn out like that. The Sabres have had their numbers on the front. And it's not something I often think about, but when I saw the jersey yesterday, it hit me that it wasn't there, and I liked it. I liked that it wasn't there.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been upset if it were still there. But again, it's not something I'm going to miss. I don't know. I think a few teams did did end up doing that. San Jose comes to mind, I think, for a while had, I don't know how long, but I think they did for a time have numbers on the front. But, yeah, it never, you know, that was an idea they had about, you know, we have all this trouble identifying who's who. Let's give you another clue as to who the player is, kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, look, I think they I saw a quote from Ron Rakuya, who is I think AdPro Sports is under the PSE umbrella now, and that was his business, or is his business. And so I saw a comment from him that basically ended with, "Sometimes you just got to listen and get out of the way." And I think that's exactly what it seems. You know, they worked on a design. Like, it is not just, they didn't just like throw something together, but they also didn't try to do something bold and new. Instead, it was really what I think they learned people wanted. And, you know, I'm not against, you know, branching out and trying different things. That's fine. I mean, we are, you know, we're getting replaced by younger and younger sports fans all the time, and tastes are different, so I get that. But in this case, I think they did the best thing they could do, which is just sort of get out of the way. This is what our customers want. This is going to be good for us. Let's just make sure we don't screw it up.
Listen and get out of the way. Is that a new sort of a new policy over there? Are we going to?
I don't know.
Here's to it. Cheers. Like, let's, you know,
yeah, right.
The customer maybe is not always right, but sort of excited to think that that might actually mean something because the jerseys look great, but really they. We knew they would. The more they looked like the originals, the better they would. We would like them. The more we'd like them. I always want to point out that the jerseys got darker in 1980, but it's not. It's just a weird thing that happened, I guess. Like they did not change anything officially. The Sabres say there was no official change to their uniform at all between inception in 1996 when they went to red and black. But because of manufacturing, I mean, it's a significantly darker jersey that they wore in the early 80s than in the 70s, or even maybe especially in the early 70s, just because, I guess, because of manufacturing. So it doesn't count as a uniform change, but it was one. This one counts.
Yeah.
This one counts.
I think now, like, it's a lot easier to control that. Like, there just is, you know, there's... I think maybe that different manufacturers just had a different version of royal blue. You know, like that was it. Like, well, no, this is our royal blue. Okay, well, you're making them now. Okay, then I guess we got to live with that. I think that might have been as simple as it was.
I think you might call them both royal, 70s Sabres and 80s Sabres, but they were definitely different. All right, so big day. We've got the uniforms, and we've got the beginning of the Blue Jays stint in Buffalo. We also have NHL playoff games that we don't have to qualify. These are the final 16. It's 1-1 in the first period between Columbus and Tampa in the first game of this round, and there are games all day. And we also have Bills camp, such as it is. Sal Capaccio will check in. We didn't talk to Sal yesterday. He's got an article up, at least one, that's new since we've talked to Sal last, writing about the safeties. And we'll get the update as to what the plans are for training camp here, as we are just under 5 weeks away from the opener. And no preseason games to talk about between now and then, of course. Sal Capaccio after a break. Thanks for being with us today. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here on WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Just like almost every other time we come back from a break, Joe tells me something in my ear.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Before we start, and this time, as we bring Sal Capaccio on via the Western Hotline, Joe says, don't forget, we need from Sal the best thing he saw at training camp because of our friends at Mercedes-Benz. They want us to make sure to ask Sal that. So let that be the second part of this question. What is the best thing you saw at training camp? The first part is, when will you get to see training camp?
It's not official yet, guys. I'm thinking sometime next week, maybe early on next week. It's not official yet. That's when they'll start their phase three, if you will, the final phase of this, you know, ramp up period towards the regular season. I think around the league, that's pretty much what's happening with most teams and media. So, you know, we'll see exactly. We haven't heard anything officially from the team yet, but I think that's when we're probably looking, is when they move into that final phase.
All right. Well, with that said, let's get this off and running with Mercedes-Benz offering exceptional incentives on Mercedes-Benz vehicles. Sale, Mercedes-Benz of Buffalo. What was the best thing you've seen today? We're going around the league and Bills-centric too, if you've got something.
Yeah, no problem. A couple things. I think, you know, Matt Stafford talking about, you know, false positive tests. He never wanted to opt out. I think that was good. The clarity on that was good today. But the best thing I saw was hearkening back to Quentin Spain winning what's called the Iron Bills belt. And he had tweeted out a picture of the Iron Bills belt that he wore, champion 2020. This was back in June, actually, about a month ago, a little over a month ago, he had tweeted. But we talked to him about it today. So we had Quentin Spain on a Zoom call today. And right out of the bat, I asked him, hey, man, you tweeted this picture out. You got this, like, championship belt, and, you know, you were really proud of it. And he had this big smile on his face, guys, and he talked about how he turned some weight into muscle in the offseason. He worked really hard, and he won the offseason title of Iron Bills. And I thought it was really cool, you know, that there's actually a championship belt. Now, I have no idea if this belt goes around or if he just made the belt. I have no idea. But whatever it is, Quentin Spain owns it, and he's super happy and super pumped about it.
We don't know what it is for. It's probably, like, for fitness, weightlifting.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's for weightlifting. It's for fitness. It's that, basically. But I don't know if, like, did they mail it to him? It's, like, one belt. Like, I think so. Yeah, I'm not really sure.
Does it get passed around from exactly guy to guy, different years or whatever? Yeah, right.
Yeah, but that's what it is. It's, I think, you know, guys that have to maybe lift a certain amount, do certain thing. But, you know, he said where he is with his playing weight, like, he's in a really good spot, you know, as far as how he feels, but also, you know, turning some of the weight into muscle over the summer, and he worked really hard on that.
Well, I don't know what that's for, but it seems like a pretty good guess here. I know I haven't won it. I've never won the Iron Bill award, but, you know, I'm young enough to still hope for it. So, offensive line.
Keep riding that bike, Mike.
Hey. 2 days in a row. Sal, the offensive line for the Bills with the Feliciano injury, the status of Cody Ford here. Do you think they'll be likely to do – oh, and the player from the Jets, Winters. Do you think they'll be – would you expect them to be as good this year or better?
Yeah, I think just because they are, you know, another year under their belt together. This is not anything really that has to do with the guard situation. I think that can be replaceable. John Feliciano's a really good player, but they're bringing a veteran in, and Brian Winters, who I think can be, you know, just as good as John, if not close to it. And even if not, if someone beats him out, I think they have, you know, internal candidates. And even if, Mike, even if there's a drop-off at guard, I don't think it to be so severe that it would hamper the entire offensive line's progress. I think the sum of that progress will outweigh that. And I think that sum is really because of these guys all being together for so long. And Bobby Johnson, they all speak very highly of him. Quentin Spain on his call today really talked about Bobby Johnson working with him and how he helped really refine his pass blocking skills. Quentin Spain did not allow a sack last year. It was a pretty amazing stat the entire year. I think he played every snap, maybe missed one, two, but he didn't allow a sack all year, and he credited Bobby Johnson with that. These guys really like him. So I think, Mike, that the offensive line is in a position to be really good, have a good year. But what I really like most is I think they're pretty deep there. Now, we haven't seen an offensive line like this in Buffalo in a while, where I think if you took, let's just say you think it's going to be Morse at center, Dawkins and Ford at guard, and then Spain and Brian Winters, I'm sorry, at tackle, and then Spain and Brian Winters at guard. I think the next five actually is a pretty capable NFL offensive line. They're not the other five, but I think that's actually, you know, a group that you could trot out there and pretty much still have a chance to win a game with.
Yeah, and plus you might get Feliciano back by, I don't know, right, you know, the midpoint. I know he was talking about Las Vegas, which is what, week four or something. So maybe that's a little soon, but still, you know, you might even improve your depth as the season goes on and wear and tear starts to happen. I think we talked about it when they signed, or were talking about signing Winters. He's had injuries, so you know there is some attrition usually at that, at those positions. So to have the depth, I think, is nice. I think, Sal, maybe the biggest wild card there is in fluctuation of performance is whether or not Cody Ford really solidifies that right tackle job. You know, like if he, because he had trouble with speed rushers last year, and that's a tough thing to have trouble with when you're playing on the edge. And if he has, through this offseason, as weird as it's been, managed to like work on his lateral movement, his foot speed or foot placement or whatever you would need to work on, and improve that, then I think maybe they could take a significant step.
100%, I agree with you, and I think every move that they've made or not made this offseason points to them still wanting Cody Ford to play right tackle, and I think that was solidified to me by their signing of Brian Winters. When they lost John Feliciano, you know, you could simply say, okay, well, you know what? We could move Cody Ford there, and we're going to have Darrell Williams and Ty Nsekhe basically battle it out for the right tackle spot. And that is totally plausible and logical. But the fact you bring Brian Winters here, I don't think Brian Winters is signing a $3 million deal to come to Buffalo, both from his perspective and the team's perspective, to him not to be at least considered the starting right guard, you know, immediately to plug in and then see where it goes, right? I mean, if he's just doesn't have anything left in the tank, or he's injured or something like that, you can always make an adjustment. But you're not paying him that deal, and he's not coming to Buffalo, I think, with the expectation that that's the case. And then the domino effect is, to me, that means this team is most likely really planning on keeping Cody Ford at right tackle, which, you know, Brandon Bean did say that is position one for Cody, but he will get reps at right guard. But you're right about that, Bulldog. I think his development there will speak a lot to how good this offensive line can be this year.
With Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. Sal, you've got a piece up on the Bills safeties?
I do. I'm pretty much done. I just put up the safeties today, so I only have left is specialists, guys. I'll work on that today and have it up tomorrow for everybody. But I've gone through every position, from quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, all that on offense, offensive line, and defense. I did the defensive line, ends and tackles, linebackers, corners, and safeties all within the last day or so. And, you know, going through the safeties, I think they're a little thin there to start. But I think only in numbers and names, because when I look at it, Hyde and Poyer never come off the field. So really, they're only thin if those guys get hurt, if one of those guys get hurt. Otherwise, you don't really need many, you know, backups. And Saran Neal, as I wrote, he's a Swiss Army knife. He can really do a lot. In fact, it's funny because back in I did a state of the Bills roster before free agency. And for all these articles, Mike, I go back and I look at my state of the Bills roster back then, and then I look at the additions they made, and I do the in-depth. And it's funny because back in January, when I did the state of the Bills had Saran Neal listed as a cornerback on their official roster. They have him listed as a safety now. Now, it might not mean anything, but to me, it does mean something. To me, it means, you know, that's where they see him, is at safety, but he's such a, as I said, Swiss Army knife that he can play all over. And really, last year, he did play more at corner than he did at safety because of injuries.
All right, so we are less than 5 weeks to the opener. What's something that comes to mind about their schedule? And for the purposes of this conversation, let's assume that they play it in order, with the possibility of some games being moved to Saturdays now, I guess, with maybe no college football. But Is there something about the schedule that sort of stands out to you, either in terms of the greater competition lies on the schedule? Anything about it? Like last year, I think that was a big talking point leading up to the season. That first game with the Jets, and then, you know, it looked pretty weak, and it turned out to be. What about this year's schedule stands out or jumps out?
Two things. Number one is something that also stood out last year to me. I think there's a lot of opportunity in the first few weeks, especially the first three. The Rams aren't thought by a lot of people to be very good this year. You know, and they're many people believe they're just not going to be a really good team. Take a step back. They're kind of resetting or something. I don't know where that comes from or if anybody even agrees. But, you know, the Jets and the Dolphins early on, I think you're catching those teams when you need to. There's a lot of changeover in both those organizations. The Dolphins are probably going to be a team that gets better as the year goes on. But they had a lot of changeover both in personnel and in coaches. They have a lot of new coaches on their staff. And the Jets, obviously, they're going to start five new offensive linemen. They're going through changes every week. It seems like they can't really get things where they need to set right now. And then you get to the Rams in week three, and by the way they look right now, I think that's an opportunity for the Bills, at least for the first 3 weeks and maybe four, to really have opportunity to win game. They could get out of the gate really well. Vegas, obviously, in week four. And then what strikes me is the end of the year, after the bye week, really, there's a lot of unknowns about a lot of teams on the roster. I think we know who San Francisco is, but who are the Chargers at that point? You know, who's playing quarterback for them? Where are they in their season? Mm-hmm. What is with Ben Roethlisberger by then? Is he going to be the old Ben Roethlisberger? People are really talking highly about how he's looked so far out there. Or is it going to be Pittsburgh, you know, they lost Ben again, and, you know, they have quarterback situation issues. Who is Denver going to be? I think a lot of people believe they could be a pretty good team this year, that maybe by the end of the year we're going to know a lot more. And then, of course, New England and Miami, as I said. I think there's a lot of interesting – all these teams could go either way.
Yep, and that's a lot. There's a lot of night games in there. Three of those games are night games. The Denver game still could move to a different spot. There's no time for it right now. And Sal, even before the bye, I would work Arizona into that. Like, what are they? Like, that's a team with a dynamic second year quarterback, and they made a big offseason move to get DeAndre Hopkins. So that's a team that could. You know, that division is looking pretty heavy, the NFC West, but they could be a surprisingly good team, maybe. I think even before the bye, there's some uncertainty there.
No doubt about it, and they have a lot of talent there. You know, as I said about getting the Jets and Dolphins early on, I think is advantageous, but getting the Patriots in November for the first time is not. You know, the Patriots have a great coach, obviously, in Bill Belichick, who I think what he's doing is he's really kind of playing the long game here, which he usually does. You know, they're going through some changes. I think they'll be a team that, you know, maybe by November, they're going to start to figure some things out, see where, you know, where they're headed, and they'll be a little bit better. I think early on, New England might have some struggles. So that's another team. You know, you're going to get them twice in the back half of the schedule, basically, you know, week 8 and week 16. So, you know, that's interesting to me about where that team is and who they're going to become.
Patriots made a running back move yesterday. I think I know well enough to not put much stock into that in terms of importance, but it is perhaps interesting. It's certainly interesting from a fantasy standpoint. Lamar Miller signing there. Sony Michel may not be healthy. They still have that kid, Harris, who they drafted in the third round last year, and he pretty much did not play at all last season, so that's kind of weird. But Lamar Miller, veteran, signing with New England. The Rams, you mentioned them. And again, sort of from a fantasy perspective, I keep thinking of them as the league's most interesting team for fantasy, which maybe I would just say most interesting team, period. I mean, they were so good, and then they looked so bad. And you've got this coach who got all this credit, and his quarterback was just lost. This killer running back who then couldn't, you know, get 2 yards without getting hit, and just everything turned sideways for them. A lot of the Gurley is gone, but most of the team is still there. The line is the big variable in that. And I know people in fantasy are like, the Rams, watch out, because everybody is soft on them now, and there's still a lot to like. Their win total is 8.5 with the money on the under. Arizona, who you brought up, Bulldog, 7.5. with the money on the over. So which team will win more games between the Rams and the Cardinals is really close.
Is the Bills schedule now as daunting slash hard? Do you think, guys, as what so many talked about, you know, even last year, as the season was going on, people said, hey, the Bills are taking advantage of a weaker schedule. That's going to change next year. We get to the offseason. Ooh, boy, look at the teams they have to play. Because I look at the schedule right now, and knowing what I know about the offseason and how it played out, I don't view the schedule now quite as daunting, as I said, I guess you use that word, as I might have for the Bills of before all this started, let's say, even before free agency, before the pandemic, all that kind of stuff. Sure, I do think it's tougher. But I think there's a lot more opportunity for the Bills considering everything that happened and the way it's gone down.
I guess for me, it would just the biggest thing that happened is Brady leaving. And that isn't pandemic related. But if Brady is New England quarterback, New England is New England. And the Bills are not the favorite in the AFC East, probably. And, you know, the schedule includes two games against him. And it's still the NFC West and it's still Kansas City. And the other teams, some of the other teams you mentioned, but it's the New England games, that's 1/8 of their schedule that you would look at probably, or you could look at quite differently.
I think that's an enormous point. I feel like we did, one of the last days that I was in there, when I was working in the sports booth and you were in your studio where you are now, Mike, I feel like we got into this and like looked at the quarterbacks for this year's schedule versus last year's, or just the teams, like it's really the similar exercise. And I felt like when we got done with that, my recollection is that it didn't feel as daunting as I thought it was. I think it is still tougher, you know, night game in San Francisco, Kansas City, like, you know, there's teams that just were not on the schedule last year, but, The Brady factor is enormous. I mean, that's two games you don't have to just shovel into a landfill whenever you talk about your win total for the year. So that's a big change.
I think the Chargers for me fall into this category too, guys, because the draft happened and they took a quarterback in the first round. You know, and Phillip Rivers left. And I'm not, you know, Phillip Rivers, we can all say, well, he wasn't going to help them anyway. But I think that kind of changed the way I view them, because I really think they're in a spot where they're going to go for it. But if things start unraveling early, they may just hit the reset button and say, we're going with the kid. And they may be a way different team by week 12.
Yeah, I don't know. They're interesting too. And fantasy player Mike goes, look at their schedule in the beginning. It's pretty soft. So if Tyrod Taylor starts week one for them, it's reasonable to think that they'll do really well. They play the Bengals early and like the matchups are good. So if they're doing well, why would you change your quarterback? You don't do that until – you could do that on one loss if you're waiting to do it. But really, you probably see that through a little bit. And so if they stay in it, it is to me within the realm that Taylor plays a lot of their season, because they have a lot of good players. Like I wouldn't expect them to be bad. You know, I know they last year they had a pretty bad record. But their quarterback got him beat a lot last year with turnovers, and Taylor does not do that. So we'll see. Sal, your thoughts on the Blue Jays? Like, are you sort of psyched for that or something?
Sure.
Yeah?
It's civic pride, man. It's cool. You know, I'm happy. Look, I'm on a text thread with my friends in Florida who, they're Rays fans, basically, and they've been asking me, like, hey, you know, Blue Jays, Buffalo, pretty cool, huh? Like, asking. They're aware of this. You know, people know what's going on if you pay attention to sports. And I think it's cool just for this city to think about, to have this day, to have this time where we can kind of step up. And no, you know, you can't go to the games per se, but I just think having that feeling of, hey, you know, and it's not just the civic pride of seeing the biggest part. Number one for me is, on highlights, here's Buffalo, right? They're going to show it. They're going to talk about it. I think that's cool. But I also think there's something cool to be said about our city stepped up here. You know, I mean, for however it went down and wherever they looked and they didn't go, our city stepped up. And I think that feels really good to me.
Yeah, and they got it, I think, really, whether it was baseball intervening because of what was happening with the Marlins and then the Cardinals or not, like, you know, we talked about this, and we're going to have Ben Wagner on. He made the point right when it was formally announced, like, there's not a quarantine, but now there is. And so, you know, civic pride, I take some pride in the fact that we were stable enough as a community with regard to the pandemic to pull this off, you know, that we didn't have to say, oh, we're worried about baseball players coming in. You know, the situation isn't stable enough. Like, the community, I think, has done largely a fantastic job. And I would take some pride in that.
I think that's a fantastic point, Bulldog. It really is. And, you know, it's a little breezy outside today, but it's a great day for it. You know, and for a little while there, we first thought we were getting them, then we weren't. And everybody's like, oh, this is why we can't have nice things and no same old Buffalo. But here we are. You know, we're here. We got to this day. And then you see the pictures of how they transformed that stadium.
Yep.
My gosh, like, they did an amazing job in such a quick turnaround. Just so many kudos to all the people down at the Bisons and the city, but especially the organization, the franchise, and what it means. And honestly, like, I got a little, like, choked up thinking about Bob and Mindy Rich and what, you know, what it means to them. And, you know, there's been some stories about that. And I think that's so cool because I remember being a teenager and wanting Major League Baseball here and them, you know, having that dream. And we know, you know, ultimately it wasn't realized. But for them to have this day and this time, I just think it's really cool for the city. And it happens on a day that the Sabres go back to Royal Blue, which is also really cool. And now all of a sudden I'm thinking about, like, I'm senior in high school, 1991 Sal again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the Blue Jays will be in their light blue, their sort of vintage light blue jerseys for this game, or uniforms for this game. I'm seeing a picture of the ballpark where they put Tony Fernandez, his number one, on the outfield wall. I think he had his number retired, but maybe not. He died recently. And so some of the things, you know, of course, Blue Jays logos, but some of the things sponsors-wise and other touches that I wasn't thinking about for the ballpark setting here will be, you know, incorporated, including that, for example, the Tony Fernandez tribute there in the outfield. Good.
They do have three retired numbers. I just looked it up.
Alomar, Halliday.
Yeah, and sorry, they have two, but then Jackie Robinson, who counts league-wide. So there you go.
Am I right, though? I'm not sure I'm right.
You are right, yes. Yep. Yeah, when you said it like that, I just thought you knew. So, yeah.
Wow, not Dave Steeb?
Wow. No, Roberto Alomar, Roy Halladay, according to Baseball Reference, and then Jackie Robinson league-wide.
Well, Fernandez was good. He was a beauty. And he had a certain way of throwing the ball to first from short, like sort of a sidearm-y motion, throwing the ball to first. He was unique, I think, Tony Fernandez. All right.
I loved the Jesse Barfield years and George Bell. I mean, these guys, I liked I liked those teams. I mean, they were good. I know there's a lot made of those 90s teams, you know, and everything. But to me, you know, growing up in the 80s, there was some really good teams. And the Yankees were not that good in the 80s, by the way, when I was growing up. They
Careful.
Were my team. But the Blue Jays were on. You're right. The Blue Jays were on.
Careful.
And, you know, I saw them at Exhibition Stadium on TV a lot. And, you know, they were good. And there were some good teams.
I also love those Toronto's teams. And I also was indifferent to, like, the top payroll in baseball early 90s teams that went to the and won the World Series. But the Yankees are the winningest team of the 80s. It's one of my favorite little stats. They won
That's
more.
That's amazing. That's why you said careful. Now,
That's
wait
right.
a minute, though. They did not. But they didn't win. And they didn't make.
They made one World Series and lost.
Playoff series from 81 on, right?
For after 81, that's right. But they did win more games in the decade than any other team.
Gotcha.
So it's one of my favorite little stats. All right. Yankee fans, there's no escape. There's no way out. There's no escape into an area, like a safe zone where you're like, well, we weren't that good. The early 70s. Not since.
Not good.
Not since. Yeah, early when they played at Shea and, you know.
Right.
You can have that. Yeah, but I'm like not giving you
post,
the 80s.
Post Mickey Mantle was maybe some dark days.
Right.
Like
right.
65 to early 70s was not great.
Barfield was a good Yankee, Sal.
Yeah, he was actually. Jesse Barfield was a good Yankee.
Best arm in the sport, maybe. Best arm in the game. And
I don't know about everybody else, but I've had enough of you trumping up the Yankees here, Mike.
I'm really sorry.
Take it anymore.
Yeah. Well.
Sorry, Sal.
As the person that drafted them in the uniform draft, weighing in. noted Yankee haters. Okay, Sal, that's good. Thanks for your time.
All right, guys, thanks.
There you go. Sal on the Wester Hotline, his training camp update, presented by M&T Bank, the official bank of your Buffalo Bills, brought to you in part by Mercedes-Benz of Buffalo, offering exceptional incentives on Mercedes-Benz vehicles, by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? And by Fiegel Carr and Joyce, your border attorneys.
Ben Wagner next as the Blue Jays make their debut in Buffalo today. Ben, who was the Bisons broadcaster for years, is not here in Buffalo, but he'll have the game up in Toronto for Sportsnet, and how weird is this for him? We'll talk about it next. First, a word for Colton RV. I've got a camping trip coming up. I can't wait. Colton RV is such a great partner. As a customer of theirs, you'll get the full experience where it starts with buying new or pre-owned, whatever it is in the way of an RV, and then all the rest, guidance, expertise, service needs, whatever, just advice along the way. And I have needed that every step of the way with Colton because I still feel like I'm not sure what I'm doing. I was not a camper growing up or really only started a few years ago taking these trips. So Colton is a special group for me. And if you ever want to get into camping, it's so nice outside these days, of course, in the summer around here and into the fall. And while it's different this year, I feel like those outdoor trips are even more important or rewarding. So allow Colton RV to help you, usher you in to that sort of facet of life if you're interested. Colton RV, North Tonawanda, Orchard Park. Show pricing in effect, even without the RV shows. You can take advantage of good deals always from Colton RV. Visit their website, ColtonRV.com. Colton RV, 50 years, three generations, one family.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.